Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today I'm back here in the Pacific Northwest where the temperatures are a balmy 40, 50, almost 60 degrees here as the afternoon wears on. And it feels substantially different from being in Fairbanks, Alaska, where it was a cool 18 degrees. Brr. Anyway, we have got a wonderful guest today to join us, Thea Summer Deer. She is a clinical herbalist. She's been involved in writing songs and performing. She's a midwife and a childbirth educator. And this woman has quite an interesting background. We're going to find out more about Thea and her fascinating book called The Wisdom of the Plant Divas. Thea, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
Your book is really a fascinating read, but I want to ask you something about your childhood. You were raised with the Seminole Indians.
That's true, I was.
Now, tell us about that, because this is a fascinating group of people. And historically, they, in their dress was very colorful, and I don't claim to be an expert on this, but these were people, they had their own language, they were extremely intelligent, and if I remember history correctly, they really were never conquered, as the old saying would go regarding the Indian tribes. Am I remembering correctly, or am I wrong?
Yes, no, you're right. They Seminole means runaway, and I think they just kept moving further and further out and away from other tribes and Europeans to hold their own, and they were able to do that in the Everglades. And where I lived was the Musa Isle Indian Village. It was at the headwater of the Miami River, and that was where they had a trading post. The Seminoles had a trading post there, and they would canoe down the Miami River all the way out to the Everglades where they had their camps, and then come back into trade. And so, you know, long story short, my grandfather buys land at where the Seminoles have a trading post. He was sympathetic to the Indians and wanted them to be able to continue to live in their traditional manner. So he said, great, you can stay here, but you'll have to work for me. And he turned that property into a tourist attraction that was very popular in its heyday, because it was on the Miami River where the cruise ships now take off out of there from Dodge Island. There was a little boat called the Village Queen, and it used to bring all kinds of people, even movie stars, up the Miami River to the Musa Isle Indian Village, and that was where we lived.
Fascinating. When you were around these people, did you have the opportunity to be able to interact with the knowledge that they had attained through their generations of living in this? And were the Seminoles, were they always in the Everglades, or did they actually migrate into the Everglades for survival purposes?
No, I think they migrated into the Everglades for survival purposes, and the only reason that they're out where they are now on the Tamiami Trail was because when the Musa Isle Indian Village closed down, that was where they were forced to relocate. So it's really a very sad story. But I think as far as the influence of the culture on me, just living day to day in and around that culture, I mean, all my little friends were all Seminole children. And probably more directly, the influence that it had on my mother and then her influence on me and the things that she taught me. She was a plant person. She taught me how to bead, do bead work, and just, you know, the attitudes of living there at the village day to day and the way they live. They live traditionally in their chikis, cooking over the cooking fires and making their beautiful, colorful piecework, which you mentioned a few minutes ago. So it was a wonderful, colorful culture to be exposed to as a child. Donna, I have lost you.
this is Donna Sebo. Sorry, I apologize for that interruption. The divas of the phone line apparently were having a CMS attack because both of us evaporated into cyberspace. So
we did.
So let's tell these, whatever they are, flying around, behave yourselves. We don't need this anymore.
Yeah, calm down.
Now, you were talking about the wonderful effects that the Seminoles had on you in your life and the fact that you were brought into so many different aspects of thinking, which I think whenever we're around a different culture, a different ethnic group, it really does make a difference because it allows us to develop paradigms. But I was fascinated with you and your story. People that have very strong intuitive skills, which you do, many times there are various modalities that they express themselves through. And you talk about the herb divas. And this is something that developed over the years with you. How did you find yourself drawn into, number one, the healing area, and number two, working with plants and understanding medicinal purposes, et cetera, about them?
Well, I think we all embark on whatever path we're on because it ultimately holds our healing. So the path that I have walked as a midwife and a childbirth educator, and even before that, I had some health issues as a child. And, you know, that made me maybe more sensitive in some ways. I was also raised as an only child, so I had a lot of imaginary playmates and spent a lot of time alone. So that influenced me. As far as actually working with plants themselves, when I was a kid, let me think, I probably was about 10 years old, I went to summer camp, and they had a folklore center there, and it was here in the Appalachians where I live now, and I was about 10 years old when I started to identify Appalachian, indigenous herbs to this area and plants, and was fascinated by that. Even before that, when I was in elementary school, I used to do these little science projects with plants. I was fascinated by their sap, and I would go around and get all these different plants and cut them open and see what kind of blood they had inside of them. And,
mm-hmm.
It has just been a natural progression, I think. My whole life, my mother grew award-winning roses. She had a beautiful rose garden.
Wow.
And we lived in, South Florida. So there were a lot of tropicals and fruit trees and her rose garden, and I spent a lot of time outside. I spent a lot of time really being healed in that rose garden. It was a very peaceful place. It was where she went to, I'm sure, to connect with her soul, and so I could feel that, and I received healing from her roses, and especially when she'd bring them into the house, the whole house was full of roses.
Mm-hmm. One of the points that you bring out in your book, which is it's a beautifully done book, you talk about herb medicine, how it takes time. In today's world, I don't know about anybody else, but there can be moments where you almost are holding your breath because things seem to be moving so fast, and there's such tremendous pressure, and it almost can feel oppressive. It's as if you've got a weight on your chest and you're having a hard time breathing, because you're out of breath from this pressure that you feel. And a lot of people have developed many illnesses, and we'll use, you know, a five-letter word, stress. And I know that is dessert spelled backwards, but I really think that stress is something that is at the core of many of the illnesses that we have. And when people are given herb medicines, they do take longer. There's not a magic pill. In fact, there isn't a magic pill anyway. But we've been so indoctrinated that something's supposed to work instantaneously. How have you been able to get around this with people? Because this is something that is very difficult for individuals to accept, I think.
It is. And, you know, of course, I'm dealing with that myself. This book is teaching me at the same time that I am working and teaching other people, but don't ever stop breathing. Just keep taking those nice, long, slow, deep breaths. We have to give that to ourselves, and it's a kind of an unwinding. We've been, like you said, indoctrinated to think that it has to happen in a certain way. But when we come into a relationship with these plants and what they have to teach us, I think you almost have to automatically slow down. And what I meant by that they take time is that their greatest strength, if we're talking about an herbal medicine on the physical plane, their greatest strength is in their tonic effect. And a tonic effect is not going to take effect unless we do it over a period of time, from anywhere from 3 months to a year. And what is different about that, and why this is such a beautiful piece, a healing piece, is that when we step off of that treadmill and we decide to work with a plant or plants, then we are recalibrating a whole system. See, we've been indoctrinated to think within a mechanistic model of healing, where you have this symptom, you take this pill, or it gets cut out. So in the heroic model or the mechanistic scientific model, people are kind of thinking about herbs in the same way. That this happens to me all the time, where someone walks up to me and they say, well, I have this symptom, what herb can I take for that? So same model, different, different pill, so to speak. And that's not how herbs work. They have system affinities, organ system affinities. So some of them maybe will work to balance the liver. Some may work to balance the endocrine system, the heart, the nervous system, and such. So as such, they go in and they are doing their magic, so to speak, to actually bring a whole system back into balance. It's not masking a symptom. It's not, hitting something with a hammer and then it has to show up somewhere else because we haven't changed our lives. So our lives get changed on a lot of levels if we can slow down enough and choose to work and come into relationship with a plant and hear what it has to say to us. Because as our body becomes flooded with this medicine, you know, we're tasting it, we're smelling it, we're ingesting it, we're digesting it, and it's changing our chemistry slowly over time. So it's a more permanent change. And then we can feel how that affects other areas of our lives.
One of the fascinating statements you make is how midwives were the teachers. They often carried shamanic knowledge forward. And that's a perspective that I don't think many people are aware of. Many are aware that it was traditionally the women within groups, cultures, that worked with the herbs. And for generations, they would pass their knowledge down. And it was a process. It was a process of association and listening and observing, testing and trying different things. And there was so much knowledge. I think I watched a Smithsonian program many years ago where they said that in certain areas of Africa, the people that were the healers, the teachers, they had memorized something like 3,000 to 5,000 plants. This was part of their training. They had to understand these plants. They had to know when to harvest them and what was good for one thing, not good for the other. So there was quite an intensive training that they had to go through, and this was all passed down through generations.
Yeah.
So when you're making these statements, this is what I have heard from anyone that has been anywhere involved close to the earth and also in becoming aware of the various environments, because every environment, the Pacific Northwest has certain things that would be very consistent with our environment naturally. Mm-hmm. The southwestern area of the United States would have something else. Where you live, there are other things that grow. And so becoming aware of these different environments and the plants that are naturally going to be better for the persons in those environments, has this proven to be a challenge for you to be able to work with people maybe in different parts of the country? Because I know that you educate people on how to use plants and how to work with them. Is this something that is part of your training with people?
Yes, it is. And, you know, I lived in the desert southwest for 9 years, and I was in California for 3 years, and I've traveled a good bit. I lived up in Victoria on Vancouver Island for a while, and of course born and raised in Miami, Florida. But everywhere I go, you know, I'm always looking to see what's there. And I tend to go back out west every year, at least once a year. And so my goal is to learn a new plant every year. Every year when I go back, I learn a new plant. So, you know, we don't have the continuity that our ancestors had, where a whole body of knowledge was being passed down through a whole lifetime that has been broken. And I mean, there are some traditions that certainly the healers are coming through that tradition and holding that wisdom. But for myself, I have to study a lot. and I do that. I mean, you know, I like to write articles on plants and then there's, you know, the piece of keying in the plants and understanding how their communities, how they grow in communities. I mean, I'm in a temperate rainforest here, and you are also in a temperate rainforest, the Gulf Islands up in the Pacific Northwest. So there's going to be similar plants, and if you learn how to work with a key, a book on how to key in the leaves and the stems and the flowers, you can go anywhere and learn the plants.
Mm-hmm. And they really help. Now let's talk for a moment about the divas, because mm-hmm. you have, and I have had the privilege of meeting some other people that have an association with nature as you do, and some people might call them elementals, but you call them divas, and they're called the plant spirits, and whatever term you want to use, and I know you probably have different classifications. Tell us how you became aware of them, and how is it that you're able to communicate with them? People talk about animal communicators. You're a plant communicator. So tell us how you became aware of this.
Well, I think I was an animal communicator before I was a plant communicator, just in that my father owned a zoo and we had a lot of exotic animals. I grew up with flamingos and monkeys and ocelots and alligators and
oh my
just
goodness.
Yeah, just kind of being around exotic animals, and I had horses. I rode horses for most of my life. So, you know, I did have that sense of being able to communicate with an animal. And then I do remember playing in my backyard, and the mushrooms would create their fairy rings. And I didn't know what a fairy ring was. I mean, there wasn't anybody who told me that's a fairy ring, but anybody can look at a circle of mushrooms and know that it's magical. So I used to play with that. I used to dance there. I used to imagine, you know, the fairies that were there. And again, you know, growing up as an only child and spending a lot of time alone, you can get good at that.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that the deva showed up for me, it was really a surprise. And, it took me by surprise because, and I tell this story in the book, but I had been living on the Blue Ridge Divide on a piece of land that was pretty magical, beautiful rock outcropping with a garden at the bottom of that, literally on the Blue Ridge Divide, so there was some pretty amazing electromagnetic energy there. And my husband and I were planning a garden. We would till and do soil treatment and haul organic manure, and we were just doing all of that. And I was approaching the end of my fertile years. And, you know, I've spent time hiking and camping and you know, giving my blood back to the earth when I'm out in a situation like that. And I really felt like, and I've done work as a midwife too with teens who are coming into their fertile years. And as I was leaving my fertile years, I felt like I needed to make an offering to have, you know, do some kind of little ceremony for myself where, you know, I was giving a little something that was sacred to me back to the earth. And I did that, and I did that. I also gave some semen back as well. I mixed the blood with my husband's semen. I'm in a committed relationship, and this is kind of funny. He's called the Green Man, and I always have to apologize to him for sharing these secrets. So much for secrets.
Yeah, and there you go.
Yeah, so I made that offering to this wild black raspberry bush that was growing next to the garden. And I did that a couple of times, and there was maybe the second or the third time that I walked down, and there were these, just this luminosity you can feel when you enter a portal, and there's something shifts, something opens, and the light changes. And I was standing there, and there were these luminous beings that were just thanking me. And they just started to talk to me, and because I acknowledged them. It's like once they knew that I saw them and that I was able to be present with them, they just started talking to me and sharing information about who they were and that they wanted to teach me. And I would find myself in a certain kind of a state where the channeling would start to come through, and I would have to literally run into the house and get on my computer and just start typing. And after I did this a few times, and, you know, I would read and my husband would read what I wrote, it was like, oh, my God, I can't make this up. And I, so that's what started it, and that was what started. And then it just hasn't stopped. I mean, it has not stopped in my life. The shift continues, and I'm continuing to be very humbled by the experience of getting to work with these, what I call, I mean, I'm calling them devas, and I mean, there's an explanation for what devas are. It's a Sanskrit word that means light body, but they're really, I feel like they're my ancestors that are already in light body. They're in the fifth dimension. They're holding open the door for us to evolve into our light bodies, and that's what a lot of the teaching that's coming through is about. And it marries really well with what we're learning about phytochemistry as it relates to plants. We're having this bigger window into our world, and they're saying, we've been waiting for you.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the fascinating chapters you have is on the medicine wheel garden. And this is something that I had an interview many years ago with a female Indian shaman, and she had her medicine wheel garden. She's here in the Pacific Northwest. I think she's passed on now. But she had designed her garden specifically for that.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you tell my audience? Now, in your book, Wisdom of the Plant Divas, there's all kinds of information, but what would you share with someone if they wanted to do something like this?
Absolutely. You know, there's so many different traditions that have different takes on the medicine wheel garden. You know, you've got the different directions, you've got the different plants that are aligned with different directions, different stars. And I would say just follow your own inner guidance. Create a circle. Bring some sacred stones from wherever. I mean, I was able to create a medicine wheel garden from river stones that were down in a beautiful creek flowing purely out of actually up in Cherokee. This is water that flew through the Koala boundary straight out of the national park, and we'd go down and get river stones. So wherever you live, there's going to be sacred stones. And you know, or whatever materials inspire you to gather and lay there and create a circle. Because when you create that circle, then you've got a continuum. Now, I believe that it's symbolic for what is above and below. It's not just a two-dimensional representation. It really does have dimension. But once you create that and you lay that down and you start to bring in some plants and you start to meditate and work with it, it will inform you. You'll be amazed at how much just that simple act of creating sacred space can teach.
You bring out in your book certain herbs, and obviously space is limited, so you wanted your book to be very comprehensive. And I wanted to pull one of the herbs out. That's the comfrey herb.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a healing herb. And this has been around, we don't actually know how long, to the best of my knowledge. It's just been there. How in the world do you think it was ever discovered? That is always a question I want to ask. How did people find out about this stuff?
Yeah, isn't that, that's a question I know that we ask a lot and can be in total awe and amazement at just what our ancestors must have experienced being here on the planet and finding these medicines. But what I would suggest is that my belief is that, and well, this is not just my belief, this is science too, we have evolved concurrently with these plants on this planet. And I don't think it's any accident that there are very specific plants for very specific purposes for rebalancing very specific symptoms. And I believe that if we walk out in our gardens barefoot, that they will read our chemistry and they will adjust their chemistry to help to recalibrate, because we are made of them, literally. I mean, every cell in our body has been given rise to from ingesting plants. So as they are capable of helping us come back into that balance and recalibration, we can get into a space where we're in harmonic resonance with them, and mm-hmm. they inform us as to the medicine that we need. And I think that, you know, I've had that experience of just needing a medicine and then it just shows up in some miraculous and amazing way, or there's a medicine that I need that I don't even know that I need and the medicine shows up. It just happens all different kinds of ways. But I think when we can bring ourselves into harmonic resonance with our soul to begin with, and then with these plants who are here to serve us, they've evolved in service to us. So if we can slow down, like you were saying, and just listen deeply, I think they can tell us a lot. And, of course, I'm sure there's a lot of experimentation that's happened. And we're so blessed to have the science that we have now to be able to go in deeper and have an even broader and deeper understanding of these plants and what they do and how they work. And I just want to preserve the synergy of them and say we don't have to necessarily take them apart and extract certain parts of them, that they work really well as a whole synergy. Now, not that there's not a place for that, but I think we're getting a little too dependent on the pharmaceuticals that are being manufactured from their alkaloids and active constituents, and that we need to bring that back into perspective with the whole plant.
And I think that's all about the aspect of being interested enough to learn so that we can utilize it. Now, comfrey is an interesting plant because I had no idea that there was Russian comfrey. Mm-hmm. There was a hybrid called Pereira Grininum. Maybe I'm massacring that poor word. But it was developed by an English farmer and Quaker Henry Doubleday. And then there was a man by Lawrence Hill mm-hmm. that is considered the father of organic gardening in the United Kingdom, which mm-hmm. was amazing to me.
Yeah.
And you say in your book that this can be grown everywhere. What is comfrey good for?
Well, comfrey on the physical level, and it's a very controversial plant. I used it in my midwifery practice. It was a miracle herb for me, and I grew it in my garden. And there are many different species of comfrey, but that could be a whole other discussion. But I used it when I got introduced to its very profound healing properties, and I'm going to tell this little story. It's not always a real pleasant story, but I had, when I was first beginning to practice midwifery, before I had learned how to suture, I had a woman who had to have a precipitous birth. The baby was born very quickly, and she tore. And we had to take her into the hospital. She had, you know, physician backup, and we took her into the hospital to be sutured. And the doctor, who had no bedside manner whatsoever, looked up at me as he's sewing her up, and he said, "It looks like a hand grenade went off in here." Mm-hmm. And I just went, "Oh, this is so not good." And I took her home, and I made her sitz baths. We did them every day for 5 days, and comfrey was the main ingredient in that. Comfrey, both root and leaf, in these sitz baths, in combination with some golden seal root and a little sea salt. I took her back in 1 week. He said, "I need to see her in a week. He wanted to make sure that her tissue was going to hold together." And I took her back in, and he looked up at me for the second time, and he said, "This is not the same woman. She was mm-hmm. completely knit together, completely healed." And so this is what comfrey does with tissue. It's called knitwort. That was one of the old folk names for it. And it knits tissue very effectively and very quickly. So that's one of the things that it does. That's the external, and they're trying to limit our internal use of comfrey, and I, of course, get into some of those political discussions in the book. But internally, it also heals much in the same way, where if you have a woman who, after birth, what I would do is I used to make, and of course I grew the leaves, and I would make it into a soup, just like you would put any kind of greens in a soup, turnip greens or mustard greens, or I would chop up the comfrey and feed that to her after birth, and she would make a very quick recovery. I have a woman right now who's trying to heal a cracked rib, and she's doing the same thing. She's eating some comfrey in her soup, and that's not something you're going to do, you know, every day for months. So you do it maybe every day for 4 or 5 days, and it works very quickly, and you don't get that alkaloid heavy exposure that they would have us believe is going to destroy our livers.
Ah, well, I'll tell you what. Your book, Wisdom of the Plant Divas, Herbal Medicine for a New Earth, Thea, it's very well done, and the information in it is very, very well presented. You have a bibliography, you've got all kinds of references here. It's a fascinating read, and for people that want to reach you, what is your website?
It is my name. It's TheaSummerDeer.com, and that's deer like the animal, D-E-E-R. So you can reach me at TheaSummerDeer.com, and that's the portal to my kitchen blog and all the different things that I do and have going on. You can find out more about there.
Well, this has been delightful. Thea, your material is fascinating, not only historically, but also in a practical sense. And I love your cover. The cover on it is just exquisite. Wisdom of the Plant Divas, Thea Summer Deer, and I hope you'll check it out. If this is something that intrigues you, this is a very good read and a good addition to your library. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. Thank you, Thea, for being my guest today. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Wow, it's so good to be home. I'll tell you, I have been out early this morning, and I was astonished at the colors that I'm seeing and around in my own neighborhood, and it is so refreshing and uplifting. So wherever you are, I do hope that you'll take the time to get on that, well, if you need to wear a hoodie or whatever, just to go out and enjoy the brisk wonderful coolness of fall and the beauty that is out there. I've seen maples in my neighborhood that just look like someone has airbrushed them with red oranges and golds, and it's just, it's awesome. It's absolutely amazing. And it's so much fun. I mean, here we are this time of the year, before we know it, Halloween's going to be here. And one of the things I enjoy, too, when I'm out and about with my companion, Victor, is the decorations. People just have so much fun decorating for Halloween. I'm seeing these humongous balloons hanging from people's trees, simulating ghosts. I mean, all kinds of stuff. It is wonderful. So have a good time. Take the time to go out and enjoy your neighborhoods. It really is special, and it's just a wonderful time of the year. And you know what? It makes walking, which is a fabulous exercise for anybody, it makes it a pure joy. It really does, because you're entertained, and you can just really appreciate the beauty of wherever you are. So living in the moment, living in the now, every place on this planet has its beauty, regardless of where it is. And I think sometimes we just have to slow down enough so we can stop, and if the roses aren't blooming, at least look at the beautiful color that's around us and say thank you for this wonderful gift of life that we have. And by the way, phone lines are now open. If you want to chat with me, it's real simple. All you need to do is call in to 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're a new listener, I'm so glad you're able to join us, and for those of you who are regulars, I'm delighted you're joining us too. And remember, all I need is your first name or your initial, and after that, I want to say, just relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask me a question about anything that you like. Because of Thea Summer Deer being my guest today, I'd come across some information regarding a woman. Her name is Roberta Hershon. And she lives in Massachusetts. And this is a woman who believes in gardens. And we talked for just a few minutes about the medicine wheel garden. It is so important to understand how significant nature is in helping us heal. And her story is fascinating. She had, at the age of 8, made friends with a wonderful little girl named Beverly. They were really close their entire life. And they had a common passion, and it was gardening. And lots of times they'd get together just to have a cup of tea, and they'd go through catalogs and oohing and aahing over different things and looking at things they'd like to design. Well, Roberta's friend Beverly was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer in 2004. And Roberta just felt totally helpless. What could she do? She just didn't know what she could do for her friend. Well, the one thing she felt she could do when she finally thought about it is that she said she could always take care of her friend's garden, which she dearly loved, and make sure that she had flowers in her house all winter long. And she said, I made sure in the spring, because she was so sick she couldn't do anything in her own garden, Roberta made sure that Beverly's garden was absolutely pristine. Well, her dear friend Beverly died in 2005. She was only 55 years old, and her cancer had progressed at a tremendous rate. And Roberta was just devastated. She felt like something had been completely cut out of her life. Well, she and Beverly had often talked about doing a certain project, but they'd never gotten around to it. With the death of Beverly, Roberta decided she wanted to create free gardens for women who had breast cancer. And she went to work on it right away. She planted her first garden for a woman by the name of Sharon. She called her project Hope in Bloom. Today, she has planted 110 gardens throughout Massachusetts. There are 200 breast cancer patients on the list for the next ones. Now, companies that have found out about what she's doing, local businesses, they try to help her out, and there are fundraisers which help pay for the cost of the plantings, which can run up to about $3,000 per garden. So she really does a big job on this. The group has a lot of volunteer supporters. In fact, there's 850 members that help with these gardens throughout Massachusetts. They help with the upkeep, and there are landscape architects and designers that actually donate their services to customize each garden to the owner's garden environment and what the owner really enjoys. Roberta said, cancer patients spend many hours in sterile hospital environments, and when you come home to a beautiful garden, it's a soothing respite. Judith Merritt is one of the people who was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2010, and a garden was planted outside of her home last June. And one of the things that I think that the gardens do is that it shows that life goes on. And the beauty of what is there is a healing for the mind and for the spirit. So I wanted to share that story because I thought it was a very special one. So many times we wonder, why are we here? What are we doing? What is it that we can do that's significant? And sometimes we get so caught up with, gee whiz, I should be in People magazine, I've got to be rich and famous, I got to go this, that, and so. And sometimes there are a lot of people that are doing things that nobody pats them on the back hardly at all, but they're there consistently because they feel that they're doing the right thing. And I think Roberta Demon, now she's 60 years old, but this is a project she can be involved with for the next 50 years if she wants to. Think of the people that she has inspired. All of the volunteers, 850 plus, that have touched in her life the dream that she and her close and lifelong friend Beverly had. Look at what it's doing. One person can make such a difference. And one of the things that I have observed over and over again is that no matter where you are, if you just stop and watch people around you, every single person has something special to contribute. I don't care if it's related to animals, vegetables, minerals, hot air, it doesn't make any difference. We all have something to contribute. And I think the challenge is finding that niche that we feel good with. I was talking with a young lady this morning at my local bank, and she's in her early 20s, and she's, you know, I started out, I thought I wanted to do medicine, and then I realized I can't stand being around sick people. So she felt badly because this is something, she said, I've got a big heart. I just love to be around people. Well, she's in the banking industry, and now she's going to be going on to a new job. And I suggested to her that she take an aptitude test, and maybe it would help you too. No matter what your age, find out what your strengths of interests are. And that's what aptitude tests are all about. And if you'll do that, it may help you look at really what's most important to you. At different times in our life, we always have to do things that maybe is not our favorite stuff. I worked for a police department. That was the last level of anything I should have ever been involved with. But I'm very glad I had the experience of working for a police department and for an insurance agency and for a telephone company. And there's so many things that in my life path I was able to experience. Did I want to stay with them? No. But they each gave me something special. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, if you get upset because you feel like your life just isn't being as productive as you want it to be, invest in yourself first by looking for an aptitude, a vocational counselor maybe, or even just going to your local college, talking to a counselor and asking about an aptitude test, and start looking at yourself with different eyes and realize that you have special gifts and talents that can make this world a better place. And that's very significant. And who knows, it could be putting wildflowers on cupcakes. You have no idea. But in the interim, whatever it is that you're doing, be grateful for it. Realize that you make a difference right where you are, right in this very moment. You're very special. And more than that, I'm very glad that you've joined me. We're going to take a break for just a moment. When we come back, well, I've got some fascinating stories to share with you. I don't think I'll have time to share a recipe, but we'll talk about a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And if you want to call me, we'll talk too. 888-627 800-516-6008. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. You know what? When you're traveling and you have kids that you have to take with you, oh, don't forget, you can give me a buzz if you want, 888-627-6008. I think every parent of every generation has always a dilemma. When you're traveling, you've got to keep your kids occupied. Well, I'll tell you what. In today's world, we have so much technology that's available. There are games, video games that can be played. There was a mom, her name is Laura, and she said, I'm so grateful for technology, because she and her family had taken a 12-hour trip during this past summer, and she said, my gracious, what a difference it made. She said, our iPhone, her husband had gotten an Android, and she said, we had shows, we had educational training applications we could use, and she said, she found out about a website, and for those of you that have grandkids or if you're a parent yourself, it's called bestkidsapps.com, bestkidsapps.com. And you can get apps that are appropriate for whatever the child's age is, and you can also host, pick up children's picture books on it. And when they took an 11-hour flight to Ireland on a trip, they bought a MacBook Air loaded with stuff for kids, and they got a HyperJuice battery. I've never even heard of this. Have you heard of it? HyperJuice battery. And you go to hypershop.com, and it allows batteries to last a lot longer. And, of course, they had all kinds of things that encouraged conversation with the kids so that they were occupied. And I think every generation has this that they have to deal with, because kids get bored so quickly. So when you are getting ready to travel, the holidays are going to be coming up, and my goodness, sitting in airports, if there's flight delays, Lord knows I've gone through that recently, and you have little ones with you, and they go, what are we going to do now? Are we there yet? When's the plane coming in? I mean, this really can drive you up a wall. So if you go prepared, and a lot of this stuff is so conveniently compact, don't forget the snacks. You can have an absolutely marvelously stress-free trip with these energetic little people that just have so much energy. You wish you could bottle it and patent it and sell it, because you'd make a fortune. Just a little trip for those, a tip for those of you coming up. Now, by the way, I want to let you know, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the Iroquois supernatural talking animals and medicine. Well, it's appropriate, right? We got a lot of spooky stuff this week. Now, on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Dr. Randolph Howes, antioxidant overkill.
This is a physician researcher that said we need to be aware of excessive use of antioxidants, and this can really be a bad thing. And then we're going to be talking about the afterlife being revealed, what happens after we die, Michael Twine, ghosts, spirits, and hauntings, Andrew Nichols. Woo, it's going to be a spooky week all the way down the line. Technology is creating so much change, and we just have a hard time. I don't know about you, but sometimes I just say, I feel like I blink and all kinds of stuff has popped up. If you really want to have an experience, go into any of these stores with this technological stuff, and you'll just go, "What? That? When did that come out? Oh, this just came out last week. It cost $5,000 or whatever." I mean, it's amazing. It absolutely is amazing how technology is moving so quickly. And there is a fascinating thing that's coming up with hotels, and I'm just shaking my head over this. Hotel towels and toiletries that are going to stay put. Now, hotels have always had to deal with people thieving and walking off with various components, anything from a coffee maker to towels to whatever. And they say what they're working on right now is having it so that one day there's going to be insert tracking chips into their towels and robes so they can manage their inventory and keep it from disappearing, either at the laundry or in the guest suitcases. Also, they are thinking about larger refillable shampoo and conditioner containers that will stay in the bathroom and not find their way into toiletry kits. I'll have to share something with you. I knew someone that ran a hotel, and he had been in the business for many, many years. And one day we had a chance to chat, and he asked me a question. Do you know, Donna, one of the biggest wastes in the hotel industry? I looked at him. I said, I haven't a clue. He said, it is soap. Those little bars of soap that you have, well, do a test sometime. You'll find that little bar of soap can last quite a while. If you have a hotel that's under AAA or is being evaluated, you have to make sure that you change the soap, obviously, with each guest, and you're to replace it every day if it's been used. And this gentleman, whose name was Stan, he said, to offset the cost of soap that had been used once and then, of course, was to be discarded. They had drums that were brought to them by the shelters for abused women and men. And what they would do, they would just say, leave these here. You put this soap in. Just give us all of your soap. Don't throw it away. Just give us the soap that's not used. And he would fill those big oil drum-sized barrels up with soap, and they would donate to the facilities that were in the area. That way, he said he didn't feel like it was being tossed into the garbage heap. Just a little trivia. My goodness, this hour just went by like the wind. I'm so delighted that you were able to be with me today. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And tomorrow, we're talking Iroquois Indians, so I look forward to having you as a guest. And that tell your friends, so that they can hear the stories, too. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.